Well, here we are in our Bible study segment. Ladies, if you have your Bibles, you can open them up to 1 Samuel. And our Bible study teacher, Beth Seifert, is here. Thanks for joining us, Beth.
Hey, Amy. Well, today we're going to be reading in 1 Samuel chapter 4, and we're going to go through the first 11 verses, and we're going to see the end of Eli's sons as they learn, and as Israel learns, that you can't manipulate God. So if you have your Bibles, go ahead and open to 1 Samuel chapter 4, verses 1 through 11. Now the Israelites went out to fight against the Philistines. The Israelites camped at Ebenezer, and the Philistines at Aphek. The Philistines deployed their forces to meet Israel, and as the battle spread, Israel was defeated by the Philistines, who killed about 4,000 of them on the battlefield. When the soldiers returned to camp, the elders of Israel asked, "Why did the Lord bring defeat upon us today before the Philistines? Let us bring the Ark of the Lord's Covenant from Shiloh so that it may go with us and save us from the hand of our enemies." So the people sent men to Shiloh, and they brought back the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord Almighty, who is enthroned between the cherubim. And Eli's two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, were there with the Ark of the Covenant of God. When the Ark of the Lord's Covenant came into the camp, all Israel raised such a great shout that the ground shook. Hearing the uproar, the Philistines asked, "What is all this shouting in the Hebrew camp?" When they learned that the Ark of the Lord had come into the camp, the Philistines were afraid. "A god has come into the camp," they said. "We're in trouble. Nothing like this has happened before. Woe to us! Who will deliver us from the hand of these mighty gods? They are the gods who struck the Egyptians with all kinds of plagues in the desert. Be strong, Philistines, be men, or you will be struck. You will be subject to the Hebrews as they have been to you. Be men and fight." So the Philistines fought, and the Israelites were defeated, and every man fled to his tent. The slaughter was very great. Israel lost 32,000 foot soldiers. The Ark of God was captured, and Eli's two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, died. Well, here we go. Remember when God told Samuel that what he was going to do would cause a tingle in those who had even heard about it? Well, this is the beginning of that. God allowed his ark to be taken captive by the Philistines. Yep, the Ark of the Covenant is now held hostage in the enemy camp. So let's back up a minute and discuss what the Ark of the Covenant was. Well, God gave Moses specific instructions for creating this item. And unlike what you might have seen in a certain movie from the 1980s, it didn't melt anyone. The ark was a chest, which had some very specific decorations, including two cherubim made of gold that sat on the lid of the chest. These cherubim were formed so that their wings reached up and toward each other, so that they created sort of an arc over the top of the ark. The ark was roughly 4.25 feet long, 2.5 feet wide, and 2.5 feet high. It wasn't huge. One thing that was true was that not just anyone was allowed to touch the ark. So the movie got that right. Therefore, as they built it, they also attached large gold rings, four of them, two on each of the long sides. They then took one long pole, think of like a dowel rod or a curtain rod, and they inserted them into the rings on each side. And that way they could lift the ark without touching it. That was how God had prescribed the ark to be carried. Keep that in mind. That's going to become important when David becomes king. But the ark contained the tablets that had God's law written on them, the ones Moses broke when he came down from the mountain to find the Israelites reveling in sin. The Israelites carried the ark with them for the 40 years they wandered in the desert, and wherever they camped, the ark stayed in its own special tent, the tabernacle. In fact, the ark was kept separated by a veil or a curtain inside of the tabernacle from the people, so it sort of had its own little bedroom inside of the tabernacle. When they hauled the ark around, the veil was to be wrapped around the ark, as well as a goat skin and a blue cloth to keep the ark both protected and to keep it out of general view. The ark led the people as they wandered in the desert. It was to go before them, 3 days before them, in fact. So they lugged the ark around. And why? Why was this so precious to them? because God's presence would come and rest between the two cherubim on what he called the mercy seat when it was in the tabernacle, and he would speak with Moses to pass information on to the people and to remind the people that he was in their midst all the time. So in verse 3, God didn't bring defeat on the Israelites, but he did allow it. And the Israelite elders knew it was more due to God's displeasure with them than with the abilities of the Philistines that they had lost the battle. They decide in their human wisdom that the way to ensure that God will be on their side and to ensure their win would be to bring the ark from Shiloh and take that into battle. What they failed to consider was that just because there's a connection between God and the ark, just because his presence rested between the two cherubim on the ark, doesn't mean he will guarantee military success if they take the ark into battle. The ark was not a talisman to be worn for luck. God is not controlled by men or by the ark, and their attempts here show that they are not understanding that once again. They think they can force God's hand. They have spent too much time with the pagans and with their own idols. The idea that bringing a statue or a sacred object into battle ensures victory was not a godly one, but a pagan one. I love the reaction of the Philistines when the ark comes into camp. They have heard about our God, the God of the Israelites. They know what he did in Egypt and the power he demonstrated there. It says they knew at least in part what they were up against. Still, they gathered up their courage and decided to be men and to fight. That will always amaze me. They should have run, but they didn't. And because of that decision, they kill 30,000 Israelites, including Hophni and Phinehas, on the same day. And they capture the ark. What a boon they must have thought this was. They now have the source of the power of the Israelites. It's too bad that they didn't understand that God cannot be contained in a box. Hophni and Phinehas should have stopped the Israelites here. They should have said, no, this is not what you use the ark of God for. Find another way to win your war. But they didn't. In fact, they went along with the ark into battle. They were so sure of their victory and so arrogant. This would be their final sin against God. This whole section, and a lot of what is to follow in Samuel, reminds us that we don't control God. We can go ahead with our plans, but that doesn't mean God is there helping us. When we choose to do the opposite of God's will, knowing full well that we are not making the correct choice, God isn't going to make it better. We are going to have to live with the consequences of our actions. Think of it this way. Woman A knows that God does not approve of premarital sex, that is against God's commands. But woman A meets man A, and as the world says, one thing leads to another, and they have sex. Woman A knows that what she did was wrong. She knows that she was sinning. But she mutters a prayer asking God to forgive her and assumes that that's the end of it. A month later, woman A finds out that she has an STD. If she truly repented, then God has still forgiven her. Don't misunderstand me. But the STD is there to stay. It's not going to go away just because she's forgiven. She will have to live with the consequences of her actions. The Israelites sinned here in a big way. God will still forgive them. But the consequence right now is that they lost 34,000 men, 4,000 from the original battle, and the Ark of the Covenant is in the hands of the Philistines. God's forgiveness doesn't mean he is going to raise those 34,000 men from the dead, or that he will teleport the ark back to the Israelites. God also uses this battle to engineer the deaths of Hophni and Phinehas. Remember, he told Eli that Hophni and Phinehas would die on the same day, and they did. So my question today, are you trying to manipulate God in any way? Is there something you are trying to do to bargain with God to keep your pet sin, but make up for it by being really good in other ways? Is there something that you know you shouldn't be doing, but have told yourself that, well, God can fix it anyway, so that you can go ahead and do whatever you want? Or is there something that you know you should be doing, but you've convinced yourself that God isn't really asking you to get your hands dirty? This is something to keep in mind as we go about our lives. This is why it is so important to seek God in all of our decisions. Sometimes God may say, either way, neither choice is a bad choice. And sometimes he'll say, neither way. And sometimes, though, God is saying, choose this one. And we need to make sure we have sought his input before making those decisions so that we don't end up like the Israelites, hiding in our tents and watching the Philistines dance on God's ark.
Well, thank you, Beth. And Beth's study guides, as well as the 10-minute podcasts of these presentations, are all available in our archives under the Bible Studies tab of our website, naomistable.com. Nancy and I will be back with more on this in just a moment.